happy Monday night, everybody. Bet you wonder where we were. Well, I'm not sure we knew where we were either. In any event, kind of interesting show tonight. And I want to lead off a little bit with a couple of profound statements. It's going to be very interesting when you hear where these came from. This one says, we do not see things as they are. We see them as we are. And it's very interesting that that came from the Talmud. And, you know, more and more I start thinking about it, and more I'm doing these shows, and more I'm learning, and some of the things that I'm learning have been very intriguing. And one of the things that's really caught my attention, and what we're going to be talking about a lot tonight, is the whole concept of cellular memory, and the fact that it seems to get passed on generations to generations. But if you think about it, you know, we are really just a hologram, a whole hologram that's made up of a body, a mind, and a spirit. And the only reason that it's separate is because that's the only way we really understand it. So it's very conceptual that when you think about that, that the only way to really heal is to be able to heal not only the body, but the mind and the spirit. And as such, my guest tonight is Althea Gray, and I had the chance to meet Althea back in February at a conference and had the opportunity to work with her, and I think that you all are going to really, really enjoy the show and enjoy listening to her and talking to her. The lines will be open midway through the show, and I'll give out those numbers now. 888-815-9756, 530-876-3222, and 530-876-9916. A little bit about Althea. She's an internationally known natural healer and lecturer, and she practices out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. She inherited her special gifts from her Nicaraguan grandmother, who was a traditional curandera, and hopefully I said that right. I have a real problem when I get to some of these things. She trained with teachers all over the world for over 30 years, and she's developed a unique healing style that disentangles patterns and conditions that we've inherited, which prevents success and well-being. She uses many tools, and she really does work tirelessly with all of her clients to help them reach her goals. She believes deeply that a healer's sacred journey with you is to do all that will empower you and make you whole. She is a certified Sat Nam Rasayan. Did I do that one right?
Yes, you did.
Deep memory process and Feng Shui master. She's a member of the California Certified Interior Designers, a board member of the Global Foundation for Integrative Medicine, a member of the American National Naturopathic Association, and a member of the American Society of Dowsers. Hello, how are you?
Hello, it's so lovely to be here tonight.
Well, it is great to have you. You know, we talked about this when I first met you back in February, about the whole concept of healing and genealogy and, you know, how we tend to keep some of our ancestors' patterns within our bones, as you say. And I understand that, part of the process of healing includes lineage clearing. You want to, let's talk about that a little bit, shall we?
Yes, I think that first I'd like to kind of explain why would you be interested in clearing patterns and tendencies that tend to appear in our lineage or family of origin or ancestry. Now, we may or may not believe in reincarnation, but we have to admit we are very ancient beings and that we may be able to trace our family tree back maybe 2, 3, 4, even 6 generations back. However, it goes back for thousands of years. So we're actually very ancient beings. And we carry through our DNA and through our cellular memory many things. Our hair color, eye color, health tendencies, emotional tendencies, philosophical tendencies, and we also carry traumas and gifts and stories about life. And how is it that we kind of carry these stories through? Well, they're triggered through our own actions. And through our own actions, we kind of wake up these deep cellular memories and karmic patterns, which are just waiting to be acted upon. So they're kind of a hidden influence that kind of dictates on some other level how we feel and act in life. So it's really important in a healing process if someone's having difficulties and wonder why they're depressed or they feel like they just can't get on in life. I like to look at a person's lineage and their family of origin and kind of see what tendencies are kind of being pervasive. And I think in any healing work, you have to look at the person's lineage and also their own past life and look at how these kind of work as a symphony in creating tendencies that we have in this life.
So basically, being a genealogist, and let's just talk about that a little bit, you know, I have always found that the more and more I learned about my family, the more I guess, took in some of their lives. I mean, you know, you can't help it. I mean, you know, you go to a movie even, and, you know, that story lives with you forever in some various, you know, point of your, you know, being. But when you, you know, start to do research and, you know, you find, you know, situations that maybe are not pleasant, or mm-hmm. perhaps you have family that was affected by, you know, the Holocaust or other, you know, horrific events, you do seem to bring those inside, and sometimes you don't even realize that they're there. I mean, on the really horrific things you do, but, you know, and the other thing too is, you know, when you think of ancestors, I mean, I have a mother who was adopted, and I know I carry a lot of her in my cellular memory, and in fact, I wrote about it yesterday. So how would you begin to work with someone, you know, in that kind of work? I mean, if for example, let's just say I am a second generation Holocaust survivor,
okay,
and I've got, you know, all this stuff bottled up, and I've got, you know, my parents are now deceased, and, you know, I live their horror.
Well, what happens to a person who has experienced a trauma in the lineage? There is something there that has trauma. There's a deep embedded trauma, and that trauma gets passed on from generation to generation. And how does it get expressed? First of all, a trauma, it's kind of a polarized energy that embeds itself into the subtle feel of the person, into the subtle side of the cell, and it really is passed on from generation to generation, waiting for a moment to kind of begin to act. Now, people who, my experience with working with people who have had grandparents and relatives in the Holocaust, sometimes they live with their own terrors, and those terrors kind of piggyback onto circumstances that are going on in their present life. And they find, for example, that they're reacting to situations more potently, or they have fears that make no sense in their life, and this is coming through. I'll just give an example of a case study that I thought was pretty significant. I had a client once that had been to many different people for help and shared about my work and came to me. And when I met her, she looked like someone had, like a beaten dog. And she had terror in her eyes, and she said wasn't able to work. She wasn't able to she was a successful person, and suddenly an event happened to her in her life, and it triggered this kind of cellular memory, this kind of experience in her life. And she didn't really know the source. And she gave me a little bit of her case history in terms of how she was dealing with life. And for some reason afterwards, when I was thinking about her case, the Holocaust came into my mind. So when she came in for her next visit, I asked her if she could relate to that. And she said, well, my grandparents died in the Holocaust. And it just happened to be during Yom Kippur. So what I did, I got their names, and I lit the white candles, and I did the fasting for them. And I went to two different synagogues, one Hasidic and more liberal synagogue. And I broke bread with everyone and went through the last rites, things that they couldn't do for themselves. And the effect of that on this person was so astounding, because she went back overnight to being a normal person. That
wow.
It was so astonishing to me that actually I started working with other people and families who have lost members in the Holocaust and performed the same kind of ritual. And sometimes they have lost family members. They find each other again. Personalities change. So, you know, there's so much more to this than we can imagine. And there's ways. There's, fortunately, now there are ways for people to actually disengage from kind of a family story that keeps being perpetuated in a lineage.
And we talked about this earlier, too. You explained to me, too, that if you want your descendants and your family members to, you know, have a better life, that by clearing up the energy field, that what you clear up will also clear up the energy field for them, too, and they will benefit from it as well. Correct?
Correct. And what I have found, because I've been doing this for a little while now, the effect is that it appears to me that a soul will kind of, one person in the lineage, will kind of embody all the traumas and all the problems. And they kind of go through life feeling this incredible urge to kind of heal themselves. And when we get into their stories, they have basically coalesced all kinds of things from their family of origin. And what I have found by doing this kind of healing work, their offspring and future offspring are become disengaged from that pattern or that trauma, that they actually have an opportunity to begin a different kind of life. So it's very powerful work.
So how would you proceed to do this if someone came to you and they said, look, I've got something that's been hanging on my shoulder, you know, all my life about one of my ancestors or my mother, my father. What is the process? How would you go about doing that?
Well, what I do, and this is my particular bend on doing this, a client will come in and I will take a kind of in-depth record of what their story is about. And I'll ask them, out of this big story that you've presented to me, what is the burning thing? What is the issue that you would like to clear and disengage from? And they will pick out something. And sometimes it's several things. And I try not to make the list too long, but try to get to the key issue. And then what I have the person do, I have little strips of paper, and I have them write down their own name and some of the family members that they would like to include in this healing process. And then I have them write one sheet that says ancestors on mother's side and ancestors on father's side. Now, some people like to squeak in an ex-wife and hope that they have forgiveness. you can't add them in. It has to be family members.
Okay.
And then what they do is they move these little pieces of paper around on a board. And I douse, using a pendulum, which pattern they're creating is going to produce the healing effect. And in essence, this person is putting Uncle so-and-so in a relationship with Aunt so-and-so and this person with that one. And with their names, she or he is creating this kind of dynamic. And then what I do is tape all those pieces of paper down in the pattern that they've created and that is doused to be the right one. And I use radionics to broadcast their own medicine. In other words, that form that they created is like a homeopathic medicine. And I find a rate for it and I broadcast it onto itself. And what happens over, it takes about a month or 2 months, the people start to change. And the pattern starts to, at first sometimes it kind of speeds it up, it becomes a little more pronounced, and then it shifts. And it finds another way. And in my work I have found that people change, have a whole kind of opportunity to live life in a different way, or they'll bring in new family members that they haven't seen in a long time, or they'll find and look in their own family that people are interacting with one another differently. So it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary, and I'm just very grateful that somehow I stumbled upon this tool, and I use it actively in my practice.
I've got two things, and one of them, maybe both of them are funny, and I just forgot one of them, but that's okay. I am wondering, and this would be a very interesting study to do, is thinking back when I started doing genealogy, which was in 1987, it was not soon after I started doing that I started having incredible anxiety and panic attacks mm-hmm. that went on for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And I don't know, at some point it stopped. But I'm just wondering if anybody else, when they got involved in their in doing genealogy, if something like that may have happened to them. I mean, it was totally out of the blue. Never had anything like it before, and it was actually quite debilitating there for a while. I didn't go out much. It was pretty serious. So I just thought of that as we were talking. I didn't have it before I started the genealogy, and it came up almost at the same time during those same years. Interesting study.
Would you like me to respond to that?
Huh?
Would you like me to respond to why I think that happened?
Yes.
Well, I think what happened is actually you began to, it was like a trigger. And that trigger tapped into your whole kind of ancestry. And if some of your relatives, I don't know if they died in the Holocaust, but there have been a few of them in spirit that actually kind of came around you and hoping that you would recognize them or kind of understand what they've been through. And sometimes that will happen with deceased relatives. They will eventually come around and say, can you help me move on? And I think what happened is that you might have connected this person with that person, or you may have found your own relatives somehow, and it put the matter to rest. But in the meantime, the tuning into that whole situation probably created, you were feeling their anxiety, and until it was resolved, it continued until you resolved it. and you probably unconsciously kind of figured out what person needed to have what to move on.
Interesting. I mean, I never really thought about it until just now, because it was exactly the same time period. So, basically, and this is what's so interesting about this, is that you can become physically and mentally sick by keeping some of the stuff that has been passed on without releasing it in a proper and healthy way.
Correct? That's right. And it's actually quite simple to release a lot of this, but because it's not something we're used to dealing with, because it, in essence, it's kind of stepping into people's belief systems. Do you believe that you have a cellular memory? Do you believe that people can linger after death? Do you believe, so a lot of people, it kind of interferes with their belief system. You know, their spirituality or their religious beliefs. And so in our culture, often these things don't get addressed. But more and more, with the advent of funny television shows that are showing haunted houses and spirits and so on, they're kind of validating an afterlife, you know? So, but how that ties into our own cellular memory is another thing. And I think that what's interesting now with this, so many transplants, that they're finding what people are discovering, that when someone has someone else's heart or liver, they're actually finding that person who has received the heart or liver has actually started to develop some of the personality traits of the donor. So, we're in our infancy stage in understanding how that all works.
It is really interesting. And the other thing that caught my attention there for a minute, and I had it and I lost it again. That's what happens when your mind's going 90 miles an hour and then some, I think. Gosh, I lost it again. I guess I'll have to come back to it. So other than lineage clearing, it doesn't have to be an ancestor that you are connected to via DNA. I mean, you can, it could be an adopted parent, couldn't it not?
Well, no. Let me tell you what happens to a person who is born and loses their family of origin.
Okay.
And I have had quite a few clients who were adopted, and they have very, very unique problems. Sometimes that infant and later in life has trouble bonding very well, and they feel a sense of abandonment, even if they've been adopted by loving families. And feel very close to them. There's this kind of void that they have. And I've tried many, many things to kind of create this connectedness. And it seems that particular thing is very damaging in terms of how that person, it's almost on a soul level. They are constantly searching for that missing family, and that family gives them an ability to express what's going on in their own cells and have it come alive. They don't really can bond and have beautiful relationships with their adopted parents, but I would say they still have their ancestors' songs singing in their bones.
I do remember what it was I was thinking about. Back when we were talking about, when you go through a healing process, that sometimes you start attracting some family members and ancestors. Yeah, I'm sitting here kind of laughing and saying, maybe that might be an interesting way to, you know, break through some of these brick wall barriers some of us have is, you know, do some healing and see if that might just break open some doors. Who knows?
Well,
I know I've got doors that have been locked up for me for 27 years or so.
That's right. And I do find when people are able to disengage from the traumas and the painful issues that are interfering with the person's quality of life, when that shift happens, it opens a kind of huge doorway for a person to engage in their own personal truth. And I think of us as basically, you know, you mentioned body, mind, and spirit. And body, mind, and spirit is, we're all spirit. Everything is spirit. Every cell in our body is spirit. We are emanations of a divine source. And how do we get disconnected from it? Well, we kind of get distracted, you know, and we're distracted in this whole life story, and we forget that we're spiritual beings, and that on some level we want to go home. We want to reconnect to our spirit. And I think, especially now, more and more people are longing, have this kind of inner longing to clear up the mess, because they really want to be walking in their truth. They want to do what they came here to do, and they want this beautiful reconnection with their spirit. So you're right. I mean, that there's a lot of benefits to doing this type of clearing.
And two, it brings peace, does it not? I mean, so many of us, you know, live in such a whirlwind, and we're stressed, and we're hurt, and we're, you know, going through all these, you know, emotions, you know, and especially now when the economy's bad and you know, people's spirits are low, not those kind of spirits, but the emotional spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is a time when, you know, you start to really reach back and, you know, look for ways to, you know, make yourself whole again.
Now, what I'm finding, what's very fascinating about this whole global dilemma, financial dilemma, is that we all have something in common now that's tying the world together, a kind of sympathy, global sympathy. And I'm finding that people, instead of investing in things outside of themselves, they are investing in themselves. They are really, really looking within and trying very hard to be the most clear, to be peaceful, to not have angst, to find this kind of harmonious way of living. And they're looking within to do that. So it's a very fascinating time, despite all that is going on in the country. And it's interesting that it's a global phenomena. No one's escaping this. That somehow we're connecting to our spirits. And that, again, we are spiritual beings having this human experience. And we forget sometimes in this life, in this journey in life, in our human experience, that we really are spiritual beings.
You ready to take a call?
Yes.
All right. We've got John from Florida on line 3. John? John? I hear noise. I don't know. I think we might have lost him. All I heard was some noise.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Hopefully he'll call back. We'll get a clearer line on that one. Now, besides the lineage clearing, you do a lot of other types of healing, too. You want to share some of that with us as well?
Yes, because I like lifting every stone. And I, you know, there's certain kinds of experiences that leave profound scars, and I may not be able to disengage. I can take the fire away from the experience, but sometimes it's not that difficult. I mean, it's difficult to kind of completely clear it out. But what I like to do is, if someone came to me and said, well, you know, I have this and this going on, so I look at it from many, many different angles. I not only look at it from the side of their lineage, but I also look at a person's past lives. And I also look at how they engage their life. You know, what are they doing to kind of sabotage their peacefulness? And so I look at all these different pieces, and little by little, I explore each thing on my list to help that person disengage, to break up the pattern, so they're no longer in this state of reaction to it all the time. It just doesn't exist anymore. So
All right. Well, let's take a. I hate to interrupt you, but we got two people holding. And okay. We're going to go back to John on line one. I think this might be the same John we lost a little while ago. John, are you there? Hello, John? Hello, John, there you are.
Hello?
Hello, are you there? I hear you. Do you hear us?
John?
Seth, Meg, we're having a hard time hearing him. Why don't we try Cherry on line two, and maybe we can get a clearer line for him. While we're waiting, you want to continue?
Yes. So I have a variety of tools. I have a lot of little tricks in my bag that help me basically go on this kind of soul journey with the person, so that that person is not spending their life in a state of chaotic reactions to things, but that they're actually focused and in alignment with their soul journey.
Okay. Let's try and see if we can take Cherry on line two from Texas. Oops, she just hung up. We're having a little technical difficulties tonight. Oh, well. Hopefully they'll call back, and we apologize. I don't know what the problem might be tonight on the call-ins. So,
would you like me to give you some case studies of interesting things that I've cleared up? I had a client once that came to me, and she said, and it was a simple, mundane thing that she had a problem with. Not so simple. I shouldn't say that it's simple, but she lived with her mother. And she said that they could not sell their house. And they tried and tried, and beautiful house, and this is pre this situation that we're experiencing in the country with real estate. And so I had a sense from her story that the loss of the family house was what came up to me, was not a new theme. And so what I did was an ancestral clearing on this daughter, and I asked if the mother could come in. So when I interviewed the mother to ask her this one sentence, do you relate to loss of the family home? And she said yes. when she was a little girl. Her family lost her family home, and it was bulldozed, so she could never really reconnect to that property. And I said, well, I think that this is a story, a theme, that has followed you for lifetimes. And so what I did, I had the daughter, I did the lineage clearing on her, and with the mother, I did a past life regression. And we went back to a lifetime in England where she actually married someone who was much older than herself, and she lost her family home and had to move in with her sister, whom we realized is her daughter today. They still live together, interestingly.
Wow.
And so once we did this ancestor clearing and clearing that trauma out of the mother's past life, what happened within, I doubt to see how many days it would sell the house, and they sold the house within a few weeks. Something that had been on the market for 4 years.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, and I have loads and loads of interesting stories of things that happen to people that just kind of clear this, you know, the whole gamut.
You want to talk a little bit about what past life regression is?
Yeah.
I mean, I could actually talk about it now since I've done one, but why don't you...
Yes, you can actually. You experience this.
Yes, I did, just this weekend. This is quite an interesting experience. I'm still letting loose on some of it. Actually, some of it I let loose on my column yesterday, so it was really kind of interesting.
What happens to a person when you take them? I studied with a really remarkable man, Roger Wilber, who believed in that just remembering a past life is not going to disengage you from the trauma that occurred there. So in order to really have the trauma disengage so that it's not acting out in your current life, you have to take the person to their death symbolically, and then you go into the bardo, and where you kind of remember everything. And you get to rewrite the script. And you get to fight back if you needed to fight back. And you get to kind of, and I've added this to my work, you get to kind of remember the spiritual lesson in the experience in that lifetime and bring back the gift so that you can use it in this life. And I've cleared people of phobias. I've cleared people of, actually I did one, this is a good lineage story. I had one person whose whole really lineage, as far back as that person could remember, was extreme poverty. And what I did was I had him do a constellation on clearing up the family's connection to that story, because this person would earn so much money but could never go beyond that, because it wasn't in his cellular memory. There wasn't in anything in his experience to allow him to move forward. So what we did is this lineage clearing on that particular issue around money, and the effect it had on him and all his family members was astonishing. He is now doing very well, even despite this economy. His sister's life, she's doing well. And her son, he's the first person in that family to ever go to college. So, I mean, there are powerful things that can happen. Powerful, powerful things that can happen.
Well, we still have, since we started late, we still have some time left. I don't know if John and Cherry want to try us again. I'm really sorry we missed both of their calls. And hopefully, maybe they'll try one more time while we, start going into the closing. You're going to be in New York. You leave for the crack of
dawn tomorrow.
There you go. And you are doing sessions up there by appointment only. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and I think on my website, www.susanekeing.com, there is the event, so if anybody is in New York that's listening and would like to schedule something while Althea is up there, you can find that on my website. And your website is www.peachbuddha.com.
And that's spelled P-E-A-C-H-B as in boy, U. DDA.com. So the Buddha does not have an H in it.
Okay. And can I ask a silly question? I've been wanting to ask you this for a long time. Where did you come up with this?
The peach Buddha?
Yeah.
Well, peach in the Chinese tradition is long life. And the Buddha is the enlightened one. So, you know, I feel like my work kind of gives a person a light in their path, in their life. So I kind of put those two together.
That's very clever. I would have never guessed. I would have never known.
And the H is out because I'm honorary consul to Sri Lanka.
Where I was going next.
Oh, you were? Okay.
No, I was going with you next. I'm not going there, but I was going to take you there and talk a little bit about that. So, go for it.
Well, I am the honorary consul in New Mexico for Sri Lanka, and that came about because of my work that I did there. I worked in several clinics as a healer, and I treated heads of state and so many wonderful people, and they are a deep part of my life. And most of the Sri Lankans, of them are Buddhist. So to be respectful to that, I took the H out of Buddha. So that's why the H is missing.
Yes. That makes a lot of sense. Now, as far as other healing methods, you mentioned to me, I think privately, you've got some, what do you call those things?
Yes.
Aromatherapy type stuff?
Well, I basically use essential oils and so on. And I inherited my grandmother's ability to do limpias, which is a very Hispanic system. It's in Central and South America, curanderas. Basically, I can remove seeds from the person's body that are tendencies and dispositions. And by doing these limpias, I kind of clean the person's spirit. So that's another way to get the person back on track. And sometimes people you have been so traumatized, they have racing thoughts or they're just kind of caught in their story. And they don't see a way out. So I like often to kind of begin the healing process with a limpia. And I douse and I use essential oils to find out which oil is the best thing for that person. And I also do a clearing of a negative, believe it or not, negative thoughts, if focused on a person long enough, will produce something like what feels like in the body, like a cyst. And when I go through the body and find them, I break them up. But those are basically formed in the body because of negative intentions either the person has towards themselves or they are experiencing it a lot from other people. So those negative thoughts, and I think in ancient cultures they used to call it the evil eye, and so on, they do have an impact on the person. So I deal with everything. I turn every stone.
Now, you know, it's really interesting because what you're doing today is not anything that different than really what was done in you know, the ancient civilizations, is it not? We just, what happened to us? I mean, we just got so industrial and so caught up in ourselves or something that we lost all the stuff that, that, you know, came before us, it seems.
Well, you're right. In ancient cultures, people took care of the body, mind, and spirit. And so somehow with the advent of allopathic medicine, people became focused on the disease and the symptoms of the disease, but they forgot to look at, well, how did that manifest? You know, besides looking at, you know, our environment and how does a person become diseased? Well, we leave out the emotional aspect of disease, and I think now allopathic medicine is seeing a connection between if a person lives with a lot of stress, a heartache, a person experiencing a lot of heartache, they may have heart trouble. You know, a person who's living with a tremendous amount of fear may end up with kidney trouble. A person is carrying tremendous amount of anger and they have no way to really kind of resolve it, ends up with liver or intestinal, digestive difficulties. So they're beginning to see these correlations. But in ancient cultures, they would not, a sick spirit produces a sick mind produces a sick body. So, you know, if you went to Tibet, if you went to the Amazon or Central and South America, they addressed those things, you know, in ancient cultures. But somehow, you're right, we became distracted from those things, and we found the wonders of a pill that could kind of minimize a symptom, but not necessarily clear it out.
And you and I talked about this, I think, over the course of the last week, that, you know, the foods we eat and the processed foods and the, you know, medicines that we're given to solve things, you know, are probably doing us more harm than good in the end of the day.
Well, I'm just going to give an example of a, I have, by the way, I want to say that I have a healthy respect for science, a very healthy respect for science. But when I get clients who, young people who are on the same cocktail of anti-anxiety, sleeping pills, and antidepressants all at once, it's just, you can't deal with your life here. Take this cocktail. And there's not enough follow-up. Some people need those things to get them to this next level. But there's not enough follow-up in looking at how that person lives, how their own lifestyle and the choices that they're making are making, creating a difficult life for them. You know? And so no one actually kind of investigates that unless that person decides to go to therapy and talk about what's going on. But often, too often, the panacea, is this particular cocktail. And life, you know, we have to actually taste, feel, touch our existence. And if you're kind of numbed out of everything, how do you grow? How does your spirit grow? How do you ever disengage from the problem? So I'm a little concerned with the overuse of these types of drugs right now.
So, and two, these kids, you know, we're coming out of this whatever period you want to call this, it's going to be one that I don't think we're going to be very proud of at the end of the day, of, you know, working so hard and stressing out and not giving, you know, our families, our friends, the time of day, we're just too busy. We're just too busy for you. We're too busy for this. We're too busy for that. And you start looking at cellular memory and how that affects people. It's pretty pretty interesting. And, you know, we're the ones that's doing it. I mean, it's this, you know, our culture in today has, you know, just really, made some changes that I think need to be reversed. I don't see how we can continue the same way and the same path that we've been going for the last 50, 60 years, probably more.
I really do see human beings taking the bull by the horn. There are many, many people out there who are starting to kind of realize that they can't control the world outside of themselves, and starting to bring things closer in within themselves. There are more people investing in themselves now than things outside of themselves. And one thing, you know, we always forget that we're human animals. We're an animal. And the human animal actually is a very gregarious being. They like small groups. They don't like to be in large groups. And if we start looking at our basic needs from that point of view, what does the human animal need to thrive and do well? We need each other. We do well when we have extended families, extended friends, and this kind of, you know, delicious connection. And when that doesn't happen, human beings suffer. They suffer greatly. And we've created a kind of antithetical environment today to what human beings need to actually thrive.
And, you know, I keep hearing, too, probably throughout the whole spiritual community, that we're coming up on the year 2012, and that's supposed to be very significant. I'm kind of new to all this, so maybe you have a little bit more insight into that than I do.
Well, 2012 is going to be, we're already experiencing the effects of the shift, the huge shift into people becoming more humane, people are becoming more spiritual. People are really making attempts to be more have a more of a global consciousness, and you can see the experiences. I mean, this you know, extraordinary global economic situation is actually we share that in common with the whole world right now, and in a weird sort of way, it connects us. You know, this computer connects us. And we're all more and more realizing that we're not existing in isolation anymore. That what happens on one side of the world is going to affect us over here. And so we're beginning to become more conscious of our kind of infiniteness. And we are more, all of my clients, whether they're 19 years old or 70, they come in with the same language. I want to clear away my garbage. I don't want to feel like this anymore. I want to move forward. I really want to make my life meaningful, happy, and spiritual. I got the same language from everyone. So you can see there's this kind of internal movement towards this whole idea that's going to happen, this big change in 2012. And I even think that we're becoming more subtle. And that's why there's so many healers suddenly have become an important part of a person's health and healing process. Acupuncturists, people are doing yoga all over the globe. And it's all tuning us in, making us more subtle so that we can tune into these kind of higher frequencies. They're taking us to a more pure, humane place.
You know, one of the reasons, you know, I started investigating a lot of this is because after a surgery about 2.5 years ago, went a little wrong for a short period of time. I started seeing these numbers, and every time I look at my clock, and it still happens to this day, I see 11:11. I mean, I can get in my car, and I look at the clock, it's 11:11. It became an uncanny situation to the point where, you know, it caught my attention, and that's when I started to do quite a bit of research on all this, and that's part of this whole spiritual awakening, I understand.
Yes, it is. And if you look at 2009, that adds to 11, and today is 11.
Yep, yeah. I've been using that number quite a bit in launching businesses and doing things. In fact, my first article in my column came out on February 11, 2009. Oh, February 9, 2009. Yeah. At 11:11. So, there you go. I'm making those numbers work for me. It looks like our time is almost up. In fact, it is winding down. Again, you can reach Althea at her website, www.peachbuddha.com, P-E-A-C-H-B-U-D-D-A. And my website is www.susaneking.com. Next week, we're going to be on real DNA and the whole story of and phenomenon of testing people's DNA for genealogy research. Bennett Greenspan with Family Tree DNA will be with me. Till next week, good night.